So today I'm going to say hi to Maurice Misielowski, who, as always, joins me on the line from Melbourne. G'day, Maurice, and happy new rooster year.
G'day, and happy new rooster year to you and the listeners.
Good to talk to you. We've got some bad news to kick off with, though. Not that it's a generalisation, but kids who start school today, as they do in Aussie, will be unemployable in the year 2032. Is that a Steve Bannon job there?
No, look, it's one of my statements. I hold it to be true. In Australia, our kids have just finished summer and they've literally gone back to school this week.
Right.
Back to school as in a new school year. We work on the February to December school year. And every year around this time, I look back at, you know, what our kids have achieved and where they're headed. And today's kids are starting in prep, which is our lowest grade. We'll finish somewhere around 2032. And in 2032, the world's going to be so different. You and I talk about this every week. But I'm really frightened that our education system is still very much working towards putting me out of school. You know, it's a baby boomer type system. And we have great teachers, but the system itself is just so devoid of any creativity and futurism that I don't think we're going to teach our kids how to get a job by the time they need to get one.
What's the main culprit here?
Main culprit is it's a system built by baby boomers. It's a system of rote learning where everything that we had to know it. So we had to know our times table, we had to know our grammar.
We didn't know why.
And all those things were really important. I don't for a moment say they weren't important, but in my day as a baby boomer, if I didn't know it, then there was no way I was ever going to know it. The only way I can get the job was to contain everything inside my head. Today's kids, good, bad, or indifferent, have more access to technology. Yes, we have to teach them the basics. They have to know how to add. They have to know their grammar. I'm still not walking away from the 3 hours. But there's so much more that they need to know because they're not going to have one job. They're going to have six jobs. They're going to have 14 careers. They're going to live to 100. They're going to work in industries that haven't yet been invented and doing tasks that we don't know. 9 to 5, we've talked about for me, I think is only going to be one form of work. So there's lots of things about 2030 that we know. And for much of that, our education system just isn't preparing our kids for.
Let me ask you something that's kind of from this end, because you do remind me of what's going on in Hong Kong in some ways. But traditional wisdom says your average tiger mummy wants junior to be a lawyer, an accountant, a doctor. So let's look at those professions for starters.
Yeah, absolutely useless in 2030. The reason is that not that we won't have them, but a lot of the things that they do already are being taken over. When you look at law, for instance,
right.
A lot of the legal clerks, so I'm not talking about lawyers, I'm talking about legal clerks, their jobs are already moving towards technology. In the States, there is something, an artificial intelligence called ROSS, R-O-S-S,
mm-hmm.
And that's being used by large legal firms. In Australia, we're starting to employ ROSS as well. You know, when you watch those law shows and you see the law clerk sitting in these huge libraries and they spend weeks amassing information for a brief.
Yep.
ROSS does that literally in the space of 30 seconds without exaggeration. In the space of 30 seconds, this computer can put together all of the precedent, find every bit of law and bring it to a solicitor, to a legal person's table. Now, that sort of thing's only going to increase. Doctors are using, again, technology more and more. We talked last week about wellness. All of these things are going to change what it means to be part of that profession. That's not to say we won't have doctors and lawyers, but what they do and the way they do it will be so different from what we have today. Again, we have to upskill our children to understand that the profession may be noble. Yes, mother may want them to do it, but it's not going to be what mother thinks. It's going to be what the child invents it.
Oh, it's nothing about nobility. It's about money, and so she can show off to her friends.
Yeah, yeah, but she's not going to be able to show off if there's no work around for these kids. If what they have are the skills that suited the job from 10 years ago doesn't suit a job from today or from next year. And that's what she needs to be mindful of.
Last week I said that I think my laptop's hurting, and I plug it into the mothership, and the mothership says, can I have control of your laptop from X company? I say yes, and it does like a big test and all that sort of stuff. So I think you said that could be the way medicine's going, in the preventative way.
Yeah, it's not could be, it is. It's absolutely where medicine is headed. It's where all of our health insurance, it's where the government's wanted to head. It's where we as humans wanted to head too, in a strange way, because we really do want somebody, I believe, to oversee us to the extent that it tells us if something's wrong with our body way before we may have found out before. So it's, for me, it's the jobs that are disappearing, not the tasks. There'll be lots of things that doctors, lawyers, and others do that we can't imagine today. But again, we have to get our kids ready to do stuff. Better teach them for a world that is uncertain, where they will have to chop and change and invent.
Let's go back to our kids that are going into prep infant school in the UK today and here. At what stage of their career do things, in general, do you think, start to go pear-shaped? Their school career. So they're, day one, they're going to be learning and reading and having stories and this, that, and the other, which is great. But as the months go by, where does it start to come wobbly?
So we have kindergarten. Kindergarten is the first 2 years that a child goes, and that's kind of unstructured play.
Right.
To me, those are the two most wonderful years of school. Everything after that is dangerous. What we do in kindergarten is we teach kids to be creative. We teach them to finger paint, to play, to try new skills, to jump, and to do all kinds of
things. And to socialize, importantly.
And socialize. And then after that, we spend the rest of their education sanitizing them. We teach them this is the correct way to do it. This is the only way to do it. This is the way you should do it. This is the way you're being marked to do it. And to me, that's where the future and the past don't meet. It's when we go down those roads. So let's go back to kindergarten. Yes, we can have structure. It's absolutely possible because there are great schools, great educators around who do it. We can, as strange as it sounds, have great structure but allow creativity within that structure. And that's what we need to do.
By the way, we're having such fun talking about millennials, but what are the people after the millennials called? Have they been given a name yet?
So we have millennials, then we go into the Gen Zs A, and then we have the new one, which is Gen A.
So we've started again.
Yeah, can you believe it? I mean, no one can come up with a word, so we've just gone back to the alphabet.
So you'll probably disagree with me on this one. So anybody who was a Gen X is going to be looked down upon by the baby boomers because of of course the silent generation. They were the moral high ground of all, but then we get to they consider each generation that goes down like softer. If you were so and so, you'd be, you know, if you ate sand when you were a kid and your mum didn't mind, all that stuff. So now the Gen A's are going to be considered softies by the millennials, or are they not?
I always joke with my kids, and of course I didn't have to, thankfully. You know, I had to walk to school 10 kilometres without any shoes in the snow. every generation thinks that they had it tougher. You know, the Beatles are corrupt. Evil is going to happen when radio comes on. Every generation sees the next generation is going to hell in a handbasket. And that's because they are doing things slightly differently. But again, these generations, this 2032 generation that we're talking about, will do things vastly differently. They will look back on I think almost everything we do today as if it would lived in a museum. Did you really use that kind of a cell phone? Did you really have those screens? Is that really how you did medicine?
Yeah. Just as you're talking to me, I'm reading a thing here from a thing called the Center for Generational Kinetics, and they're saying people who talk about generations have reached different conclusions, and frankly, a lot of people don't do actual research, so they're just guessing. For instance, generation birth years vary by geography, and you'll see varying characteristics in different parts of the world. Being a millennial in Athens, Greece, with its current unemployment situation, few months old this, can lead to different expectations and behaviours than being a millennial, say, in Austin, Texas. So it's a Facebook thing, really.
Look, I absolutely agree with them. Around that notion also, as a marketer, we used to talk about demographics, and demographics are the way you clumped a whole lot of people together and said they were similar. And because they were similar, you could market to them or sell to them. I don't think demographics exist today either. I think what's happening is that we are becoming more individualistic, that we have baby boomers that act like a Gen A or a Gen X or a Gen Y, and because we have such personalized access to the world, that we really are very, very different from that homogenous group that we're supposed to be. And what I find most interesting is that all of us are really very different at different times of the day. So with technology, with friends, we just act very differently.
How much do you reckon that whatever perceived habits of a certain generation are, it's to do with the technology at the time? The millennials, people just slag them off about phones and being zombies all the time. But that's because we have the smartphone.
I think that's what it absolutely is. Now, technology for me is not the way to use today. I go back to the 1600s and the definition. Technology is the way we work. That's technically what technology is defined as. And the work that we do is defined by our culture, by our habits, by society's needs. So in that definition, I absolutely agree with you. It's absolutely about the way we work that defines who we are and what's important to us.
So it's not about mollycoddling and spoiling, really. It's just about a different set of needs and rules for a different generation.
And that's what it absolutely is. It's again to do with child rearing. If you go back 100 years ago, children were reared very differently. They also didn't have such a long childhood. Everything changes, and every generation, as we said earlier, laments the fact that their children are so soft.
Mm. I want to change the page here, Maurice, without getting political, hopefully. We've all seen what's been going down in the news recently. The key word is migrants. But, you know, it strikes me, migrants plus a strange place equals change.
Yeah, look, I think so too. What it takes for somebody to see something different is to see it as an outsider. You know, it's that wonderful saying that a visitor can see for a mile. And that's what I find often, that when you look back in the history of invention, of things being different, it's somebody who's come into an environment who's been uncomfortable with what's currently done and says, why can't you do it this way? Why don't you try this? And that's traditionally been migrants to Hong Kong, to Australia, to America.
Anywhere.
Doesn't matter where.
It's quite funny. You were chatting off air with me about Elon Musk and the company that he represents, one of the greatest scientists that ever live, by all accounts. Tesla? Is that an American name?
Yeah. Well, no. I mean, you know, all of them were immigrants. Who knows if they would have got into America? And Elon Musk has had a really interesting week too in the last week or so. Over Christmas, he was sitting in one of the traditional LA log jams. The things we see on television all the time where the cars go nowhere and take 3 hours to move two blocks. And he said, this just can't be what transport's all about. I'm going to fix it. And he actually tweeted that. And it went around the world, became one of these interesting little memes of how is he going to fix transport apart from doing the Hyperloop and other things. And what he said about this week, literally as we speak, he started yesterday, on his Tesla site, so on the site where they physically build some of the Teslas, he's brought in these big borehole drillers. These are the things that go into the ground. You know, usually use them for building, for erecting the large buildings. And he is beginning to look at how he can reinvent hole drilling.
Okay.
Hole, as in tunnels.
Gotcha.
Because what he wants to do is, he says that if he can drill a tunnel quickly, efficiently, and he's talking 500 to 1,000 times faster than current technology, then he can put new roads in and we can start to travel in these tunnels and he can change traffic conditions around the world really quickly. So again, that's that thing about seeing a world differently and saying, why not? Why don't I have a crack at it?
You know, it's quite interesting. If people are taking this so-called Muslim ban, this refugee, whatever you want to call it, nobody's really sure anymore, to extreme lengths here. I think America, one of the most famous refugees, if you like, of all time, has got to be Albert Einstein.
Yeah, absolutely. And again, just look right back through their history. I mean, they were all proud Americans. They all called themselves Americans, but they certainly weren't born. They weren't born there. Or if they were, they were the descendant of an immigrant. And really, when we look back at most countries, Australia is absolutely the truth of this, and I think America is too, that we are all children of immigrants. I mean, yeah. At some stage or other, somebody went on a boat.
This is true.
Literally went across the sea to get there. If it was 400 or 500 years ago, it still was the way it happened.
Mm.
So we all came to countries as foreigners and eventually found our way to become a local citizen.
Well, we could go through the list all day, but the important thing is why people do things. And as I say, I don't know, it's like there you are, you're in a strange place, your body kicks in and says, I need X, Y, and Z. Next thing you know, you're Nikola Tesla or whatever.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's because you haven't been there long enough, or you're not that entrenched that you have to believe everything else everybody else believes. You can actually see different and you can stand up for that too. And that takes a certain type of person.
Okay, well, that's interesting because we can finish where we started. We talk about millennials and we talk about complacency. Is this something that we're going to see with the Gen A's that you're talking about now, who you reckon might be unemployable in your country by 2032?
I never think that. I just don't, because every generation finds its way. They manage to stumble through the world. They manage to get old. They manage to accumulate assets. They manage to live and have, for many people, full lives. And they then go on to do the same thing to their children. They swear their children are too soft. So they will find their way in the world. What we need to do is we need to understand that it is significantly different. And when we start to compare our world to their world, really the discussion goes nowhere.
Yeah. I'll tell you one thing. You've just brought up an idea here. One thing we've never talked about is, you said wealth. Let's talk about money. Money as a thing. Do you really see that disappearing?
I see it as being a really huge issue, and I know it is for all of us anyway, so it's not just this is a futurist thing. But I, in this sense that we've talked, and the statistics tell us that we're about to have 3 billion more people on the planet. We know that we're exponentially going to have a rising middle class. We know that there will be fewer jobs as we know them today, fewer income sources as we know them today. This distribution of wealth is going to become more and more of an issue. I firmly believe that by 2030, we're going to have to readdress this whole notion of money and wealth to ensure that people have enough basic income
and it means
to do
something.
The things they need to do and that it's meaningful. We also need to understand that, or I believe we will need to understand that our self-worth, who we are as a person, it'll be more difficult to tie that to our wealth and our bank balance because that just won't be there in the way it has been in the past. So there's a whole lot of stuff about this wealth that's going to have to change over the next couple of decades, and Generation A will certainly be at the brunt of that.
We're going in a great big circle, Maurice. Does that mean at some stage of the game we're going to end up bartering sheep and iPhones?
We have in the past.
Yeah, I know. That's what I mean.
There's this really interesting thing going into some countries, which is called a basic income. And that is governments are beginning to play with this notion that as somebody who lives in that society, you are entitled to X number of dollars, regardless of whether you work or don't work. And with that, you have to sustain yourself and your family. If you have additional needs, then we might look at topping that up. And this basic income is being touted over the last couple of years, and I think will be for the next decade or so, is one of the possible remedies for this. So whatever it is, we're going to have to be up for the debate one way or another. We can say, look, let them go get a job, but the reality is there isn't a job, and if people don't have jobs, society begins to break down. It doesn't help any of us.
I tell you what, Maurice, we're going to put the lid on it now, but can I ask you to think about this one job that hasn't yet been created? I want you to speculate on that one. It sounds like that sketch from Derek and Clive, but you know what, we'll talk about this next week. In the meantime, Maurice Misolowski, great to talk to you, and Happy New Year of the Rooster.